Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking, you know, once again about the changes to the economy that COVID-19 has made and done for all of us on a day-to-day basis. We talk about digitalization, digital transformation, and all the virtualization that has happened since the start of the pandemic. And as things are moving more online, so too has financial advice. And before the pandemic, the research told us that people would rather interact face-to-face with their financial planners because, you know, these issues of finances, they can be very sensitive, they can be very complex, and people prefer to have that face-to-face interaction. But for today, we are joined by Lisa Hogo, who is the Divisional Director of Change Communication and Trade Marketing and Liberty, to hear about what the developments in the space are and what the situation is on the ground in terms of virtual financial advice. Lisa, greetings to you.
Hi, Madeira.
I think a good place for us to start is just maybe understanding your specific division at Liberty. We all know Liberty as being this huge, you know, company, financial services, etc. But specifically for your department, your role, what work are you guys, you know, doing and in charge of?
So I, as I said to you, change communication and trade marketing at Liberty. I sit in a division called Client and Advisor Engagement, CAE. And that's essentially where the old sort of sales division sits. And I think what's most telling about that is that Liberty's realized that the shift away from sort of selling the sort of old style selling into a more coach for life advisor style relationship is one that's actually represented within the structure. So my role specifically in that is to actually take the changes that need to happen, the communication that we need to drive between Liberty and the financial advisor, and then the change and then the sort of the trade marketing around that, to help advisors understand, obviously, our solutions for clients. So it's almost, my role is to almost bring, connect Liberty to the advisor. Mm.
And I guess when it comes to that, because there's connecting Liberty to the advisor and then the advisor to the actual consumers, what shifts or changes have you seen? Because I'm pretty sure that, you know, financial advice looked pretty good during the pandemic because people were going through, you know, so many hassles, so many trying times when it came to their finances. Did you guys find that people were reaching out more, or did people finally say, okay, fine, I need financial advice now, or was it still, this is still an expense, you know, on our lives?
So I think, look, the first thing that we can't underestimate is that our advisors went through 2 years of digital transformation in 2 months. Like a crash course. So a lot of advisors who had been very used to, and I don't know if you know, but Liberty has the most experienced advisor base in the country. So we in the what we call the e-advisor base, which is advisors who have experience in the industry, we have the biggest component of that. And so you can imagine that it was a massive shift for them to go from the very one-on-one personal conversations that they've been having into this virtual environment. You know, so I think that the overall shift was quite interesting, and our advisors took to it, actually, I have to tell you, like ducks to water. And those people, those clients who had advisors, of course, they reached out. And then those that didn't, they turned to the internet.
And then when it comes to that, the internet, are people trusting? Because I think what we spoke about it in the beginning of, you know, the research does say people prefer to have these one-on-one interactions. But, you know, like you said, 2 years worth of digital transformation in 2 months. When it comes to that, did the consumers also transform along with the advisors? Did they also take to taking their financial advice like ducks to water?
So I think, Madeira, it's important to remember that talking about your finances, I mean, the average human being would rather, we'll talk about sex before they'll talk about their finances. So it's quite a shift. And I think that what's also important to understand is there is actually no one-size-fits-all approach. There are sectors within the sort of Gen X and millennials that are, provided it's secure and there is chat functionality, they prefer it. I mean, in 2015, there was a survey that was done where 20 to 30% of clients actually said they'd be open to virtual engagement. So, you know, that's 5 years before we kind of had to get going with it. So I think what you are seeing is that you've got certain sectors that are really, really keen to embrace it and see it as a way to quickly check in and check out with their advisor. And then there's certain sectors who still want to sit across from you and have a conversation. I think that what is interesting is that 53% of millennials will find a new advisor if theirs is not using time and energy saving tech. So you can see that you've got this diametric shift. And what you've got is you've got an advisor who's got to kind of pivot between the two.
I guess now, because, you know, things have been opening up, etc., our advisors, I guess for the older generations, I'm guessing that, you know, those one-on-one conversations have sort of come back in over time.
So I think, you know, there are 48,000 complex financial advisors. So that's a financial advisor who can advise you on both risk and investment and short term. And when you consider the population of South Africa, we've for a long time needed to find a way to democratize advice. And this probably represents a kind of a sort of easy fix for that, right? What you're actually seeing is the older generation who are really battling because of the volatility in the market, needing that reassurance and that ability to chat and reach out versus making a new plan. And obviously, they're the most at risk. So bizarrely, you're seeing a lot more connection virtually or telephonically in that sector versus, I guess, the boomer sector, which is kind of my age, who still want to have a convo, still want to get their plan updated. And let's also be clear, you know, what people are seeing as important has also shifted. And so that means that a lot of plans that were in place have got to go back and be re-looked at or rejected.
I can imagine that all of this that we're discussing is going to make for some interesting research and studies one day. But, you know, based on, I guess, the previous dispensation before lockdowns came in, what you're saying to me, I guess it sort of falls in line with the way that one would think. The young people, you know, they're like, okay, if it's internet, it's cool. The older people think that, okay, fine, I still want my face-to-face interaction. Have there been any, I guess, surprises along the way, you know, I guess, a departure from what the research versus the actual reality on the ground? Have there been any surprises along the way, or has it sort of gone pretty much as you guys expected?
So I think there's probably four key things that I think have been interesting. I think that the ability to forge stronger relationships virtually, so to harness technology to tell you more about a client and where a client is, so using social media, using what the company itself knows about that client, and pulling that into a place where an advisor is almost given the chance to be more insightful. So it's almost like the right advice at the right time equals value, right? That has been a really interesting shift for us to understand that complete need to sort of almost join everything together that we know about that client, but then couple it with the adaptability and the empathy that an advisor brings. So I think previously, quite rightly, you said that young people will transact online, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, previously, young people were happy to transact online and they didn't see the value of an advisor because they wanted to do it themselves. But now you're seeing that shift back into, okay, I actually need somebody who's unemotional about my finances or somebody who understands this stuff. What has shifted in that relationship is, you know, the old adage around, you know, bullshit baffles brains. What you've got now is you've got to have a financial advisor who's really, really keeping it simple, keeping it real, being 100% transparent. And because you haven't got that face-to-face interaction. So that trust comes right up to the top. And he's got to appear in a different way. He's got to show up differently. So it's not that hard sell. It's that time spent to build the relationship virtually. It's giving some advice before actually going in and forming the full relationship. You know, that's one of the things that took us by surprise early on. We actually built a little tool called Quick Connect, which is a self-diagnosis on your sort of financial well-being for clients to use and for advisors to use to actually help them open that conversation. Because you can imagine, you know, this guy suddenly shows up and wants my deepest, darkest financial secrets, and I'd rather talk about sex than my secrets. So we had to introduce a number of elements that sort of almost act as icebreakers. And a referral system, very much asking for people for referrals, rate my service, etc. So advisors have had to do sort of four things. They've had to make sure they've got a virtual presence, because we know that seven clients will stalk you before they want to have a conversation with you. And validate you. They've also got to think outside the sort of realm of financial services and actually go more into that sort of coaching and kind of upliftment, like I'm here for you minute. And then they've also got to talk to their clients and get really real about the sharing of personal data, which a lot of sectors find very difficult. But we also know that that people will do it if they see a benefit, right? They see a value enhancement or a discount off the back of that. And then the last thing is really thinking about their client base and actually understanding how their priorities have shifted.
Yeah.
And how they've got to then check in to actually work that out.
Yeah. Everything that you're saying just sounds so... I can imagine exactly what you meant at the start when you said, I guess, digital transformation, 2 years worth of digital transformation in literally 2 months. But... I guess maybe taking a step back, because one of the things you keep referring to this, and I think it's a really good point, but where you said people would much rather discuss sex than they would, you know, their money and all of that stuff outside of financial advice, you know, generally, because you guys are client facing, dealing with the clients, etc. How have you seen, I guess, you know, people just... discussions around money evolving over the pandemic, you know, are people still sitting there, you know, clutching their pearls about money, saying it can only be with, you know, a professional? Or are people, I guess, maybe even in their own homes, between spouses, between partners, etc., having more open discussions about money?
So I think, you know, when times are tough, you've got to get real, right? And I think one of the things that we found so interesting with financial advisors is that this avoidance of the real conversations around money. So you know, we've spent a lot of time investing in tools and in conversations, or helping advisors to have conversations which basically talk about, you know, let's not put off for tomorrow what we can actually understand today. Let's actually get a plan in place and prioritize what you need and get you the help you need. Because, you know, financial advisors, generally speaking, you know, they have a network. So they know a tax guy. They know a guy who's going to help you navigate the sort of uncharted waters or the dangerous waters of UIF. they're unemotional about your money, so they're able to help you have, you know, talk about your new goals. And what we are seeing is definitely a shift away from what you would call a sort of luxury item kind of focus in the younger generation into, okay, I actually need to think about my financial future and my financial well-being. And that's where you're seeing this new market come in. So I guess, you know, there's almost, there's a portion of the sector who want face-to-face and want that sort of coaching, but you've got now this emerging where you've got your younger people who are gaining wealth, where previously their priority was the flash car or the designer bag or whatever it is. And actually this pandemic has forced them to think about, okay, what if I get sick? What if I die? What if, you know, and actually start to engage with putting some money away, because all of us have friends who've been retrenched, who've lost somebody, or who are sitting with the long-term effects of COVID and are really battling to actually do what they need to do on a daily basis. And I think that's the piece that you know, we need to be thinking about and harnessing now, working out how we support that.
Now, Lisa, you've been giving us quite a lot of information and statistics and data just around, you know, financial advice. Are there any other nuggets that you guys have, you know, have with you just around, you know, people that have financial advisors or the rate at which, you know, financial advice, it's, I guess, correlation with wealth and savings and all of that?
Okay, I think by now you've realized I'm a card-carrying advisor proponent. But I think the stats don't lie. So if I look at the stats, we did research in 2018, and what we discovered was not only emotional but functional. So functionally, clients who have an advisor have significantly higher net worth, in fact, 50%. Consumers with an intermediary have more investable assets. And then from the emotional perspective, 64% reported that they're more committed to their goals and feel that they'll actually be able to reach financial independence, while 73% said they are more confident and they actually understand the needs, their financial needs, have a plan, and feel that they will actually be able to achieve financial independence in the long term. So the stats don't lie, right? So it's more than your net worth. It's also your self-confidence.
No, your self-confidence indeed. I'm sure it's that effect of, you know, just knowing that I've taken charge of my financial life, and you know, you get into that mindset of a person who is, you know, financially responsible, and you carry yourself that way. I guess as we round up the discussion, it would be good to get your sense, you know, based on everything that you've just said, that, you know, it is tough times. And in tough times, people do need to be real. And there has been that shift, you know, particularly around the younger people, you know, towards building wealth as opposed to, you know, just getting those short-term flashy things. And I liked something that you said earlier on, where you said before the pandemic, young people would have just, you know, rather gone out and, you know, figured out their own finances, but now they realize that they need someone. So I guess your outlook, you know, are we going to continue to see, you know, people, you know, looking for advice, or was this just because there was a crisis firstly? And then secondly, the whole virtual thing, when people are, you know, are able to just walk around, do whatever, are you anticipating that people will go back to that situation of, you know, the in-person meetings, or has this virtualized thing just become a way of life 100%?
I honestly think whether or not virtual advice gains traction is actually up to financial service companies and how they react in terms of putting the tools in place to actually manage the interaction better. If you look at today's tools, a financial needs analysis, for example, which is almost like your bedrock of financial advice, if you look at that thing, it's basically a glorified Excel spreadsheet. There ain't nothing sexy about it. It's very difficult to have a two-way conversation around it. And so investing in those tools that allow that connection or drive that connection will be very important to making sure that this sort of virtual advice piece is sustained. I also think that that we're going to go back to a point where it's a hybrid. There's going to be some instances where people want advice, and there's going to be some instances where they want to jump online and do it themselves. And what's important is that the financial advisor is very clear about where he adds value or she adds value. And then that financial services companies come in behind and actually take that weight off them, either through virtual servicing or allowing, you know, direct models to a certain extent. So maybe your short term is direct, or your, you know, once off life cover to cover your bond is direct, because you don't need advice in that space. And so when it becomes more complex, you go into a more complex environment, which is augmented with digital tools that, number one, help you understand where that client is, and number two, fosters that communication, right, that connection.
Okay, cool. So that's been us. We're discussing the issue of financial advice moving online. Research telling us that before we were forced to do these things, people would much rather have talked about the complex financial issues that affected their lives in person, as opposed to, you know, doing it online. But 2 years worth of digital transformation being done in a matter of 2 months, as Lisa Hogan, who is the Divisional Director of Change Communication and Trade Marketing at Liberty, was telling us. She was also highlighting some of the shifts that have been happening in their industry, because you have some people that still want that in-person experience, some that are quite okay with the virtual, and she's saying that financial advisors have also had to become, you know, quite adaptable, sort of shifting between the two. Also highlighting the fact that young people who didn't really see the value of financial advice before the pandemic really are thinking about wealth building, their finances, and all of those issues. But the older generation still struggling a little bit to adopt these virtual means. So that's been it. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Madhira.
This is Madhira's Take.
Fascinating discussion just around how people are dealing with their personal finances and this move to digital. And it's really quite striking, like what Lisa was talking about, that before the pandemic, young people really rather they felt they did not need financial advice. And I think that is a key point, because when it comes to the older generations and whether or not they choose to adopt, you know, let's say virtual meetings with the financial advisor, or they still want to do it in person, the fact of the matter is at least they still have and are seeking financial advice. And I think at this point it's quite important for young people to be out there looking for financial advice. And at least with people now having that shift in mindset where they do see the value, the last year has really made a lot of people fiscally responsible and really think about their finances in a deep way. And I think more importantly than that, it's that shift towards building wealth as opposed to that short-term flash that Lisa was talking about. That's a very interesting point. And the reason that's interesting, one then thinks about how the results of that shift in mindset, depending on how pervasive it is, because obviously this is not, we can't paint the entire, you know, millennial population in South Africa with one brush. But if there is a significant enough portion of South Africans, young South Africans in the millennial range, that are choosing to build wealth as opposed to having flash, etc., what does that do for general consumer spending and buying patterns, right? That's the first thing. And the second thing will be how are, you know, retailers, how are, you know, services, companies, etc., are going to respond to some of those changes? Are we going to see maybe a bigger boom, you know, maybe a rise in financial advice and, you know, that industry? Or are we going to see sort of more, wealth coming into financial and investing markets as people decide that they want to build wealth, and one of the best ways is to invest, let's say, in the stock market, maybe property? How is the young generation's shift in mindset towards wealth creation? How does that influence buying patterns? Because I guess one would understand that demographically, your youth population usually has a less fiscally responsible mindset, and that develops over time. So over the lifetime of a person, you can, you know, sort of see a general trend, you know, gravitating towards wealth creation over the long term. But if young people have sort of been jolted towards wealth creation now, like, what does that do for that trajectory where in the younger ages your luxury brands or, you know, some of your consumer goods would have been targeted towards, let's say, your 25 to 35 year olds? What does that do for those types of products? We wait and see, but it does, you know, it's interesting, and the effects in the economy will be quite fascinating to watch over time. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Life. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a Multimedia Life production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.